You are listening to AI Unleashed with your host Johnny Samwer. Tune in to hear from experts in the field and influential leaders as they share their expertise on the potential opportunities and challenges of artificial intelligence and what they believe the future might hold. Make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to AI Unleashed. Our guest today began his journey at Stanford University and the University of Virginia, where he studied chemical and mechanical engineering. He served as a senior engineer at H2Gen Innovations and later took on pivotal roles at Tesla, where he was in charge of the supercharger program, led infrastructure and equipment design for the first gigafactory, and managed the 80-person battery design team for the Model 3 launch. Today, as the co-founder and CEO of Overview, he is driving innovation in computer vision products and product development. It is my honor to welcome Chris Van Dyke to the podcast.
It's a pleasure meeting you, Chris. I wanted to start off with maybe you just telling me a bit about yourself and how you came to co-found Overview.
Thanks for having me, and I'm excited to have a good conversation here. I'm an engineer. I studied mechanical engineering undergrad and worked at a startup that kind of built equipment for a while. And then I went to Tesla kind of early on in 2010. Tesla was under 500 people and hadn't put out the Model S yet. And I worked there on charging equipment, and that was sort of a side part of Tesla. So it actually had even more startup feel within Tesla. And Tesla grew to 40,000 people while I was there. So I kind of saw the, ton of growth. And, but I also wanted to start my own company and was kind of looking for a good idea that I was passionate about that I thought I could kind of do outside of Tesla where I'd been. And so me and another manufacturing engineer, we worked a lot in the factories and ramping up the lines and kind of working with the automation. And we realized that the self-driving car technology that was showing up in the product was really good, but none of that technology was making it into the factory. And there was kind of a good opportunity to take some of that new AI technology and use it for manufacturing and manufacturing inspection.
Yeah, that's really interesting, since I'm guessing like your experience at Tesla like shaped the creation of like Overview in that sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot about the manufacturing industry and learned kind of how to make new technology and how to see where something could really be improved, and so those two things really combined well for Overview. If I hadn't kind of been as deep in manufacturing as I was at Tesla, I might not have realized and understood how the manufacturing industry worked, which is kind of a key part of Overview.
Yeah. Can you maybe like provide an overview of like Overview's inspection systems, which are powered by deep learning?
Yeah. So we put our software onto a kind of all-in-one camera, GPU and lighting setup that's in like a industrialized enclosure. So it's kind of rugged for use in a factory. So you have kind of all of that in one, then you put our software on it, and our software allows a manufacturing engineer, just not an AI engineer, but a generalist production engineer, to take pictures of their parts, show the camera good and bad, and then train a model. And it only takes an hour or two to train it, to including kind of all the labeling and picture collection. And then it's also got kind of a features for integrating it into the factory and connecting it to other robotics and other factory systems. So it's a powerful deep learning engine in there, really kind of meant for defect detection, and then an interface that's really targeted towards manufacturing engineers folks, you know, who build, do stuff in factories.
Yeah, I guess that's really unique. Like your approach, like the combination between like the software first strategy and like the new technology. And like, how does this combination like contribute to the like effectiveness and like, I would say, scalability of Overview's product?
Yeah, I think we, you know, we try to combine the kind of sort of, you know, really good understanding of what the manufacturing engineer customer wants and the new tech from deep learning. So there's kind of older companies that do a lot of manufacturing products, but they don't have a ton of deep learning. So, and then there's, you know, other kind of AI startups, but they don't really have the manufacturing knowledge. And it is hard to actually just in general to scale things in manufacturing. So again, kind of our knowledge of it helped us get this product to a place where we think it is a little bit more repeatable and easy to kind of expand. You know, everything in manufacturing, people want a lot of customization because every factory is a little different. So we've tried to make the product flexible for so that the user can do the kind of configuration themselves.
So in a sense, like you provide, I would say, like the deep learning side of things, but the user like creates or like trains the model on what they try to produce, I guess.
Yeah, they need to take some pictures of the parts they're making and show the camera both good examples and bad examples. And then, you know, once they've done that, the camera will train itself and can start to do the detection, you know, itself. And we have kind of a you just, you know, hook up your laptop and it's a sort of step-by-step interface to show you how to do that.
Yeah, so it's pretty user-friendly then, I would say.
Yeah, we really tried to make it user-friendly.
Yeah, I mean, like your product is like designed to like cater to enterprises, like manufacturing goods of like all kinds. Like what is one particular field of like product that or that has or where your product has like a lot of use?
Yeah, you know, it's probably in part because what we knew, but automotive. So you know, there's a lot of car manufacturing. Cars are made in high volumes. There's a lot of cars out there, but they're also kind of big and complicated, you know, things. So they really have a lot of manufacturing tech that goes into them and a lot of robotics and all kinds of stuff. And we do have customers in a whole range of things, packaged materials and aerospace and medical, food, but the automotive and car part kind of manufacturers, that's a big there's a big kind of sweet spot for us where our tech works kind of well for the volumes they like, the usability is nice, and it fits well with them.
Yeah, I mean, can you maybe like explain how the model works? So like, for example, I don't know, when detecting like surface scratches, does it look for like specific patterns that like resemble scratches in that sense?
Yeah, we have both a kind of classifier on the device and then a segmentation tool as well. So if you're doing an inspection where it's, you know, good or bad, or like is a part missing or is something out of place, then the classifier, you know, works quite well. So there's the algorithm kind of first identifies the part. And again, the engineer sort of stepped through how to do this. You identify the part, then, you know, you tell the camera kind of where to look on the part. So if it's, you know, a bigger piece of a structure or something, you might tell it to look at the end where, you know, the little welds or particular components are supposed to be, and then you show it good and bad, and then it can you know, do the rest of that itself. It can look in the right spot and it can determine good and bad. If it's a scratch on a kind of bigger you know, sheet of metal or something like that, then you use what's called a segmentation algorithm where you show it what the defect is like, and it starts to be able to find the defects. So it can find a scratch no matter where it is. And so we have workflows that kind of, you know, step people through both of those to, you know, explain how to find the defects you want.
Yeah, you mentioned like the model telling you if one part is missing. Does that mean like the model has to know like the final version of it, or like what parts are included in that product to know like what part is missing?
Yeah, you have to show it good examples. So examples of you know the part completed and or the assembly completed with everything in the right place. And then you should, you know, it's usually show it bad examples too, with like one thing missing or, you know, something that's in there that's not supposed to be. And then, you know, once you've shown it, you know, kind of a handful of good and a handful of bad, it can start to determine those. You know, manufacturing is quite a bit more controlled. That same process, if you're doing, you know, like a robot, autonomous robot out in the world, that's kind of hard because there's all kinds of corner cases and stuff. In manufacturing, you know, you're looking at the same thing over and over again. You kind of are, you know, you might have a robot that can hold it in the exact right position. So you still can, you know, you still have to have a pretty good algorithm to determine, you know, if something is right or not, but it's still easier than something that's kind of out in the real world with like a huge amount of different scenarios that can happen.
Yeah, I mean, I find it kind of surprising because like normally like deep learning algorithms like require like extensive like training data, but I feel like the user only has to take like a couple of pictures either from like the target and I don't know the manufacturing process, and then more or less the deep learning model is already catered to like their product.
Yeah, I mean that is kind of how it works, and you know, yeah, it's between like 10 and 20, so it's still like you have to get some amount of images, and yeah, the algorithms are just really good these days, and we've kind of tuned ours in particular to be good at this kind of manufacturing style, and you know, the new class of algorithms, you actually have to do even less, the ones that are kind of more of these transformer style, so that there may be even more powerful products coming in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, like deep learning technologies and like AI driven systems are rapidly evolving. What AI spaces do you like see evolving the most in like the coming years? Do you think like deep learning will be the main focus of attention, or will it be like the general intelligence?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're really focused on these kind of specific applications, and what we've found to be kind of the hard part of our customer, our product to getting it sort of popular with a customer. Often the AI is necessary, and you need it to be kind of like there to be doing the thing that's important, but actually just making it really easy and user-friendly and easy to understand, that's kind of more important. So I do think there'll be a lot of really big improvements. And in our case, yeah, if you could only put in like two or three good images and then it could tell defects, you know, without that, that would be a pretty big improvement. And I think that will probably kind of happen as the algorithms get more powerful. That's sort of I don't think we really are focusing on a use case where a more general intelligence would be that important. Other than that, it would just make it simpler to set up. But again, the kind of part of this setup is getting the device to talk to your other factory devices and less about getting the algorithm working. Those are both are kind of part of it. And yeah, we even with like kind of more cutting edge AI, there's still kind of half the product is really more about usability. So in some ways we don't kind of need to be only pushing the AI. We need to be kind of balancing it.
Yeah, I mean, you talked a lot about like the deep learning model and how like the there are already very good deep learning models out there. Recently I've like read a book about AI, and a lot of what's all a lot of the content is like telling me that like in the coming like decade, it's more about like the implementation of AI rather than like the actual creation of the models. Do you agree with this or not?
Yeah, I mean, society-wide, I don't know, but certainly in manufacturing and the space that we work in, the challenge is not the model exactly. It's more about getting it in a form that it can be used by manufacturing engineers. So people don't really know AI that well, and they work in a factory that, does something, particularly useful, and they do it well. And there's other robotics, there's other data systems. And if you're going to put a device that's doing anything, especially like a crucial kind of defect check, it needs to be very reliable, and it needs to communicate with the other devices, and it needs to be easy to set up and all that, and safe. It can't be like sort of defective or easy to hack or anything like that. So all those things, you could have the most powerful AI model possible, but if you don't have that other stuff, no one is going to want it in a factory. And just kind of the way product development is, some of that other stuff is more, almost takes longer, and it's harder to get right than the model itself.
Yeah, so I would say it's more about like the simplification of the actual model for like the wide population, as well as like the cybersecurity, in that sense.
Yeah, definitely. Simplification of the model and kind of like understanding of the specific challenges of whatever the end user is. So if this was like a construction, if it was inspecting construction or something, it might need a whole nother set of kind of integration and constraints that would be part of construction. So basically, simplify the model and match. You give the engineers, the target, customer, exactly what they need, kind of around the model. Those are the challenges.
Yeah, and I would or the also a lot of focus is like on the user interface, right? Like the personal experience, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Making it easy and straightforward for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot about like the future of AI. What do you think of or like do you think there will be any dangers of AI in the coming like five years or so? What is your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's very powerful, and the stuff that we focus on is automation and doing something that you needed a person to do before or really couldn't be done before. And so I think the branch that we're focused in is really meant to be useful and helpful. It is still kind of disruptive because jobs and stuff, our thing, we're not really displacing that many jobs, but autonomous vehicles and humanoid robots, like there's a set of kind of AI driven products that really will disrupt the labor force. Then there's this the other branch that's more of the general intelligence and the kind of like tricking people and stuff that could really kind of get more out of hand. I'm not like an expert in that kind of stuff, so I can only just guess that the way most people do, but I'm certainly like impressed and surprised and a little sort of scared of how fast everything is improving. It does seem like you roll things forward 5 or 10 years, and if the pace continues, it could get really, really powerful, which always is a little scary.
Yeah, I must agree with you on that sense. Specifically, I don't know, but I on social media specifically, there have been like some im or some fake generated AI images. I don't know, getting millions of views, And yeah, it's quite scary. Specifically, I've like trained and coded like some models myself, and I'm always surprised like how good they actually are. Like I guess in the end, it depends on how much data you have, because I guess in the end, it's like, or specifically for like a classification model, it could be like, or the accuracy will be 100%, I would say. But you mentioned like, obviously in 5 or 10 years, if it stays unregulated, that it could get out of hand. So what kind of like rules and regulations do you think we should have?
I don't like personally have a thing that I think we definitely should do, but I do think probably experts should be working on ways to regulate and kind of put in kind of bigger guidelines. I think that, you know, just letting the kind of companies that have all the, you know, the heaviest resources sort of do whatever they want with the models, that seems risky. So maybe you need some kind of government sponsored labs or something that are also really working on some of these big models. But yeah, again, I don't have like a kind of clear set myself, but I do encourage experts and stuff to try to, you know, come up with a comprehensive plan.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary if you think about like the big tech companies like Google and Apple and Amazon and whatnot, about like how much data they have and what they can actually create with that data, right? So yeah. Would you say, I don't know if you read this, but like Elon Musk proposed like a ban on like the development of AI, like would you agree with this or not?
I don't think I agree with a straight ban. Maybe of some type of large language models, you could eventually decide, or some of the transformer models or something, you could eventually decide to limit those, or you need very kind of strict licensing or like oversight basically to kind of develop those models. So I think some of the most powerful models should get extra scrutiny and oversight. And then the kind of narrower AI, the stuff where you're focused on a specific application, that stuff probably is okay still for now. And it might, maybe as it gets more powerful, it needs to be sort of looked at. But yeah, if anything, it would be on those very general ones, and maybe not sort of a strict ban, but maybe a more kind of collaborative oversight or something for those.
Yeah, so maybe like the governments or like the top people like coming together and just like coming up with rules and regulations. I don't know. You can only use like this amount of data, and you can't make it too general and whatnot, I would say.
Something like that, yeah. And someone said you got to make sure it like can't sort of copy itself onto like another server or something. So it, like, you know, and anytime you release a new model, you could have a whole series of checks for like, is this thing actually, you know, more powerful than we think? It's tricky though, because then it could be trying to fool you. And it really is a, you know, an amazing kind of place that we're at right now, that we have to think about all this.
Yeah, I don't know. I when you said that, I just had to think about, I remember when like ChatGPT launched, at the start, people found like some jailbreaks to make it have opinions and whatnot. And like later they were patched, but I felt like, I don't know, OpenAI had some responsibility to like check that beforehand, I would say.
Yeah, although I think they talk about it and it's like they tried to check what they could, and it's just very hard to check everything. And if you check everything, you know, you may never ever get it out. And so that actually releasing it and getting other people to check, it's a tricky thing. I think that everybody did I think they learned a big lesson. Everybody kind of saw, even with that relatively sort of, you know, low level compared to some of the stuff we're talking about, it still could behave in ways that no one expected. And, you know, that's pretty bizarre that can happen with a piece of technology.
Yeah, I agree. I just sometimes like think about not only like what the AI could do, but like what people could do who could code like a gen, or I don't know, if there's like a model that's has like general intelligence and like more or less everyone knows how to code it or like has access to it, like what people who want to do like something harmful could do with that model, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely, as the models get more powerful and more people have access to them and more people can kind of dig into the code and take away any of the constraints, like that obviously is also going to be a big thing for, you know, the tech community and society to sort of grapple with.
Yeah, and I mean, like later on, the AIs will probably have like a lot of connections to like servers, databases, maybe even to each other. So I feel like everything will just be more connected through AI. And if it gets in the wrong hands or if the AI decides to do something harmful, then it could be quite dangerous, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, we've always kind of had, you know, things that are dangerous that we've created, or at least, you know, in the last 100 years or so, but this does feel like a different, it's a more kind of public and like new thing to yeah. That could really go wrong. You know, I'm 42 and I've seen a lot of tech, but it does feel a little different than the other stuff I've seen.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you, Chris. This was really interesting. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem. It's fun to talk about this stuff. And, you know, there are obviously kind of crazy things that could happen, but it's also a very exciting field to work in. And, you know, the powerful, useful applications are really, you know, really great and helpful. It seems, you know, that I've really enjoyed working in the field.